Town Sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
We are on standby for the exit presser for Coach Mike Brown. We will throw to that as soon as they go live. Chris, in the meantime, pretty interesting situation here with Jonathan Kuminga and the Most Improved Player Award. Jonathan Kuminga, I think I saw him third and fourth, so he probably wouldn't have won it. But one of the new stipulations with this 65-game thing, and this is per Dalton Johnson of NBC Sports Bay Area, Jonathan Kuminga, when it came out, Chris, you actually DM'd me because for personal reasons, I was quite interested in who won Most Improved Player. And Chris, you hit me up and said, how did he not receive a vote? Yeah. So a lot of people were confused because, like I said, he was third, fourth in odds.
Right.
He was right there. Even Tyrese Maxey, a lot of people thought, oh, he was kind of a baller last season. The Most Improved Player thing is just a bit confusing.
It's broken.
To begin with, but it turns out Jonathan Kuminga received no votes because he wasn't eligible for Most Improved Player voting because he only logged over 20 minutes in 61 games, and the minimum is 65. So right. He played in more than 65, but he only logged 20 minutes or more in 61. And you were telling me, and we were discussing the spirit of that rule is so guys wouldn't check in for 2 minutes and then check out, so they would be eligible.
Right.
But if we were to look at all the games, I know somebody is out there on Warrior Spaces blaming Steve Kerr for this.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think those were situations. I think there were just days where Kuminga didn't play.
Yeah, that would be really interesting. I'll see if I can find that real quick. But definitely, it was pretty interesting. And I feel like they really shouldn't. In my eyes, they shouldn't have that rule apply for anything except for all NBA and MVP. Like, do you care? Does anybody care that Jonathan Kuminga in four games didn't reach that 20-minute mark? Like, should that really affect him having to win an award or maybe get a contract incentive or anything like that? Like, it just feels like a bit too much. Like, I understand for MVP, for your biggest awards, you definitely would want to have that, but For these tiny, I don't think it applies to sixth man or anything like that, but there's a lot smaller awards that I just don't feel like it really matters. And I'm looking at it now, too. Jonathan Kuminga had 8 games where he played 18 to 19 minutes.
Wow.
So it just would have taken one or two extra minutes in four of those games, I believe, for him to qualify for an award. So it's like, how is that really fair? Like, he played in 74 games, and in, what is that? That's in 12 of those games, Steve Kerr didn't play him 20 minutes, but in six of them, he played pretty much 20 minutes. Like, I don't see why. That just feels like it's being too, and I know it's obviously letter of the law, but what are we doing? Like, who cares?
Yeah.
Especially for Most Improved Player, award that is already fundamentally, like, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander got a Most Improved Player vote. What are we doing?
Remember last season when Ja Morant was up for MVP and Most Improved Player?
Yes. What does?
And then it became, hey, could it be based on? Because even if it was based on when you were drafted, it was just weird because obviously Kuminga was a lottery pick. You know, Chris, it reminds me of something, and this is like an unspoken rule. It reminds me of going back to school here in college. There's this unspoken rule, and I don't know if they do it with bigger. I don't know that they can get away with it in bigger conferences, but essentially, my last year at Temple, we were in the Atlantic 10 conference.
Mm-hmm. A10, yeah.
They were moving to that new conference, the American Athletic Conference, the season after.
Gotcha.
And there's this unwritten kind of shady thing where if you're leaving, you won't receive votes for all conference.
This. Yeah.
So
this being a thing.
My coach puts in the names, for whoever put me in, put my other teammates in,
right.
And we didn't get any consideration because I guess it's just It's just right. a part of, oh, well, you're leaving, so your guys can't get anything, even though we're seniors that have nothing to do.
Right.
We ain't going to be there next year
exactly.
anyway.
Exactly, yeah.
And I don't know how they get away with it.
Yeah, that especially just, it doesn't make sense, and it is like, I don't know, man. Sometimes sports can get in its own way, can try mm-hmm. and be too cute, and it definitely seems like this is one of those situations where they just got way too cute. And I you know, I feel like, I'm just trying to, like, would you rather have seen, instead of Tyrese Mack, do you have a problem overall with Maxey winning?
To I mean, me, he that's balled. Like, he balled, but he's right at the line. Because he was a baller last year.
Exactly. And, like, to me, it's, again, I feel like we're getting, again, into the spirit of the award conversation mm-hmm. where you look at the guys who finished after him, Coby White. Like, to me, spirit-wise, mm-hmm. that's who wins the award.
Yeah, nobody was talking about him last season.
He loses by 14 total votes. Because, yeah, I mean, he loses by 14 total votes. He he's right there to beat Tyrese Maxey. Şengün is third. That makes a ton of sense. Jalen Williams, he was good last year, but mm-hmm. going into his second year taking a leap. How about this guy? I would have much rather seen Jalen Brunson get that award yeah. than Tyrese Maxey. That right. makes a lot more sense to me. So, like, I feel like this whole awards process and, yeah, I mean, you mentioned your Temple thing as well, like, it just feels like sometimes with these awards, we get in our own way of mm-hmm. just trying to do what the actual spirit of it is, and that's put the best people on the list of those awards, whether it be first team or second team All-NBA or whatever, All-Conference, mm-hmm. Most Improved, Sixth Man of the Year. All of these things, it feels like we're getting way too cute and just need to figure out how we can get this thing back to the basics.
Yeah, yeah, Most Improved Player. I don't know what type of metrics you put behind it.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a threshold. Could it be a threat? Is it
Like, you have to score more than 3 points per game.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah, something like that. It's just something that makes it.
Elevation in minute. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes it make more sense. We are on standby here for Mike Brown's exit press conference, yeah. and we will throw to that as soon as they go live. While you wait, you could fire up SacktownSports.com.
That's right.
The best moments of the season for the Kings, and that was written by our own Joe Girose, and he went around and asked all of the hosts what they liked the most about this season, what was their favorite moments, and also how can the Kings improve. You can see Carmichael Day's answer, you can see Jason Ross's answer, my answer, Chris's answer, and of course the Drive guys, Kevin Whitey Gleason and Kyle Draper. All those are there. It sounds like we're ready to rock and roll with the Mike Brown presser. It's also on the Kings YouTube channel. All right, let's hear from Coach Mike Brown.
I appreciate you guys not only for coming out today, but for the entire year. You guys were a lot of fun to work with. I don't see my guy James Hamm. I guess he's boycotting me. I don't know. He's going to get fined. Didn't he miss something else? And I got to be careful because he missed something else. And I went at him. And his son went at my neck. He was like, hey, don't mess with my dad. So I won't say anything about James, although he should get fined. But we'll leave it at that. No, you guys were great this year. So I want to thank you guys for this year and the time that we spent together so far. But although we're all disappointed that we're not playing right now, you know, there were some good things in terms of our growth that happened this year. I'm proud of our guys. Our guys, they competed. They prepared the right way. They tried to lock in and focus on the details. They continue to try to improve upon our identity, trying to play fast, obviously trying to play physical, which really increased, and then playing for each other. This group has been connected from day one, and that connectivity has gone a long way in terms of our growth, and that's a lot of fun to be around. You know, obviously, a few wins here or a few wins there would have had us playing right now. But that's the way the season ebbs and flows. Last year, I think Foxy hit two for sure. I think Chicago and maybe Orlando, maybe three or four buzzer beaters. And, you know, he doesn't hit those. And who knows, you know, maybe we have the same record or we have our worst record. But the growth that our guys have shown this year has been tremendous on both sides of the ball. You know, defensively, the growth speaks for itself in a lot of areas, especially with us going from, I think, 23 or 25, around there, to 14, 15 this year. With the same group of guys for the most part, with a few injuries, our guys grew a lot on that end of the floor. They embraced it and they took off on that end of the floor. Offensively, I thought our guys were good as well. You know, we finished, I think, 13th. And I'm not an analytics guy, but you guys can fact check this if you want. But, you know, we knew this year we didn't shoot the ball well from the free throw line and then even from the three-point line. You know, there was a drop-off. And one of my guys brought up the fact that if we shot the ball at the same rate from the free throw line as we did last year, which wasn't extraordinary, it was more than doable, we would have finished 7th in offensive rating instead of 13th. And so at the end of the day, if somebody says, hey, you guys shoot the same rate from the free throw line as you did the previous year, you're going to finish 7th in offensive rating, and you're going to go from wherever we were, 23rd to 14th on the defensive side of the ball. To me, that just shows how hard our guys competed and worked to try to get better, not only individually, but collectively as a group. So I thank them for that because they're a lot of fun to be around.
Talk about what you were haunted by last season, a Game 7 playoff loss, and carrying that pain into the offseason. I'm just wondering from your standpoint, what kind of haunts you this time? Obviously, it wasn't a Game 7, you know, exit for you guys, but what do you think back on this that you're going to carry most into the offseason?
You know, I obviously, you know, your last loss is always your toughest loss, in my opinion. And, you know, to lose to New Orleans, especially when I felt we had pretty good mojo going, we had a pretty good opportunity, and I felt we improved in a lot of areas throughout the course of the year. That makes it tough to not have a chance to play in a 7-game series. That makes it tough. Because when you look at the West and you look at how we competed against the West, you know, anything could have happened. You know, the sky was the limit. I think that's how close these teams were this year when it came to on the court play.
Mike, Jordy got announced as the Brooklyn Nets head coach today. I was wondering, for your staff, do you anticipate anybody moving with Jordy over to Brooklyn, and any plan to replace Jordy? Do you think that will be internally, externally, and then Summer League, if you have any idea who will be the head coach for that as well?
First of all, congratulations to Jordy and the Brooklyn Nets. Fantastic hire. You know, it's pretty neat to see guys that you either A, got into the league or brought to the front of the bench for the first time, and you see them get an opportunity. And I've had a handful of guys that have been able to do that, so it's really neat. And Jordy's story compared to the other guys is really, really unique. I'm excited for him and Kelsey and his kids and his family. And I'm excited for the Nets. But my first two hires when I got this job were Jordy and Luke Laux. And I told Luke if anybody leaves from the front of the bench, I'd move him to the front. So he's going to go to the front of the bench. I'm not sure, you know, what Jordy's situation is or who he'll try to take at the end of the day. You know, that's to be determined. You know, he and I are close, and we'll have conversations about that as time goes on. What else? I'm leaning towards Doug. I think it'd be great for him to get that experience and to see what it's like to, you know, make decisions on the fly and put a practice plan, to be in charge of putting a practice plan together and connecting a staff as well as a team and all the other ins and outs that come along with coaching a summer league team. So I think he might be the only one that, because Luke's done it before. Jay obviously has done it, and he's been a head coach at a lot of different levels before. I think Doug may be the only one that hasn't been in that position yet.
Coach Brown, I do want to go back, you know, talking about the course of the season. There were some bad losses to considerably some bad teams, you know, to Charlotte's and the Detroit's and the Portland. I just want to know how you view that, you know, when you look back on the season, and not to let that happen going into next season, when those games probably could have determined a playoff spot as well.
The first thing I say, Tony, it's hard for me, and not that it's wrong. I think everybody has their opinion, but it's hard for me to think that we're going to beat every team that's not a playoff team. We're not going to go 16-0 versus Detroit, Charlotte, or, you know, those types of teams. It's hard to do. The last year that I was in Golden State, and you know, we won a championship, like, we had a pretty good team. And Indiana came into Golden State, and I couldn't even tell you who the guys were that were on their roster. They were missing so many guys, and they smacked us. So it's going to happen. Obviously, you know, we don't want to lose to anybody. You hope that it doesn't happen too often. Just like you hope that if you're up 15 or 20, you don't lose games like that too often. But it's going to happen. You've seen it in the playoffs. We've done it to other teams. Did it to Golden State. I think we did it to the Lakers. We did it to a handful of teams. So the ebb and flow of the season is going to bring different things. And, you know, at the end of the day, each game is its own entity. And I don't know if there's one thing I can sit here and tell you now that will encompass all those situations that you're talking about to where next year it's not going to happen. You know, I think there are some games where we lost because we didn't do a good job defending this person or these types of actions, or didn't get back in transition, or we didn't shoot the ball well, or we didn't shoot the ball well from the free throw line. You know, so I think each situation is different. The thing that I take away from it, and I've said this consistently, is, you know, going through situations like that, that's a type of adversity, because you went through it. The outcome wasn't what you wanted. It disappointed you. You felt the hurt. But the neat part about it, if there is a neat part, at least I feel there's a neat part, is you experienced it, and it helped with your growth. And so I think going through those types of situations and feeling the hurt afterwards and reflecting right after the game ended on what you did right and what you did wrong will help us going forward. Obviously, this summer, just like I know our guys, it's a big summer for all of our guys. It's a big summer for us as a staff. We're going to go back and we're going to watch, if not all the games, at least most of the games. And we'll reevaluate everything that we went through from the beginning to the end. But there's not a common theme that I can sit here and say is the answer to us doing, you know, losing games to the teams that you mentioned. And that common answer would be the answer to where it won't happen next year. I hope I'm making sense. So, all right.
Hey, Mike, going back to the defense a little bit,
we saw a noticeable improvement really from the All-Star break onward. I think you also mentioned during that time that you typically see officiating start to change a little bit. They allow a little more physicality as we ramp up towards the playoffs. That plus, I suppose, a player's willingness to put in that effort down the stretch. My question is, how sustainable over the course of a full season do you think the way you were playing defense was to where you can expect that in the November, December, January months of the season as well as the end of the year?
Well, I truly believe we're on track to have a winning culture here that is sustainable. I like our group. I like our competitiveness of the group. I like the togetherness of the group. I like the hunger of the group to want to be better. I like, when we lose, you could tell it bothers guys because, we all been in situations where when you lose, whatever your walk in life is, sometimes it doesn't bother guys or doesn't faze people. And it bothers our guys, and to me, that's going to help them grow. So, having said that, what was the last part of your? So, having said that, I really believe our guys will lock in on the things that they need to do to get better this summer, knowing how hard it is going to be overall just to be able to compete and get to where we want to go. And I truly felt that they feel that, or they felt how much needed it was for us to be better defensively. And so that carryover with the guys that we have in the locker room, I can see it being here because of what I just said. It's going to have to be in order for us to be better. There's no other way. Now, does that mean we're going to come out of the gate being a top five defensive team or a top 10 defensive team? I don't know. But all of our guys from top to bottom know that we won games, especially down the stretch, not just from our scoring and our shooting, because we didn't always have control over that, but that we won games also from the defensive side of the ball. And the good teams, in my opinion, you'll see as the playoffs go on, they'll show on that end of the floor more than offensively. I mean, you're seeing it a little bit now. How many games have been won in these playoffs? 92-87, and it's hard, but that's the side of the ball you have the most control over.
Mike, you mentioned that you're early in the evaluation process and everything.
Sorry. Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay. Go ahead. Yeah. I'm easily forgettable. but you mentioned you're early in the evaluation process, and you have some decisions to make with some guys like Malik and everything, but are you okay with what your grasp is of the roster? Are you okay running it back with the same roster next year, or do you feel there's a need to upgrade in some way?
Yeah, every year, I think teams change, sometimes you change a little bit more than others. And I think, taking a step away from the season, taking some time away from the season, and then circling up with Monty and Wes, because they'll lead the charge in that area, but circling up with those guys, and which they're already doing, by the way, but trying to put a game plan together, I think is going to be big. I absolutely love everybody in that locker room. We all do. They competed their tails off. We could have, in my opinion, we could have easily won 50 games this year, 52 games this year, even with the injuries. But at the end of the day, just like, us losing Jordy and me moving Luke to the front of the bench and me having to figure out the rest of the staff, change is going to happen. And it's just a matter of of what we feel at the time that we start doing it.
Coach, when you got this job, you mentioned the importance of creating a culture.
Yeah.
And at this point now, 2 years have passed. How successful do you think that has been, and how do you maintain and improve upon that?
I think we all have been a part in creating a winning culture here. You know, Matina and her group have been phenomenal. Monty and his group, they've been phenomenal. The players have been phenomenal, you know, and it takes everybody to kind of buy in and do their part to get it to where you're feeling pretty good about it. I also feel that it's definitely sustainable. But, you know, when you do talk about culture, it's usually extremely hard to build, but it can go away quickly if you don't work at it every day. And I truly believe that our guys, that Matina and her group, that Monty and his group, and everybody else works extremely hard at trying to have the best environment here that's sustainable for a long time, and that's what excites me about this place.
We will get to the rest of the Mike Brown presser after these short breaks, and then Chris and I will react with your calls. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Live and local.
Live and local.
This is Sacktown Sports.
All righty, we are back, and without further ado, here is the rest of the Mike Brown exit presser.
Coach, you've touched on previously on how this team is always being connected and staying connected, and especially in a season like this that had some adversity. Why do you think this group was so connected in the way it was, and how important do you think going forward is it that this team is connected on every front you can possibly think of?
Yeah, I feel the group is connected. It usually starts with your guys, and you know, Domas and Foxy. You know, you could throw HBN and Malik and and a couple other guys. They do a good job of trying to keep the group together. Obviously, our staff too, our medical team is one of the best in the business, if not the best. You know, our performance team, in my opinion, is the same. Those guys work their tails off, and they don't get enough credit for what they do. But they help in that area as well. And so when you have the type of people around you that we have, it makes my job easy. It makes Matina's job easy and Monty's job easy to just kind of keep the wagon moving forward. So that's what excites me most about the people we have here and the direction that we're heading.
Hey, Mike.
Okay.
When you look at the offense this year, and you know, I guess going back to the playoffs last year, kind of what Golden State did, and you know, I assume that teams make adjustments over time and, yeah, you know, try to take things away. What kind of things are you guys going to look at in terms of changes there? What do you want to keep the same, and what, you know, do you think you might be able to change and kind of fine tune going forward?
It's a little early to really, you know, give you exact answers, because like I said, we're going to take the summer to evaluate a lot of stuff. But you know, the one thing that slipped a little bit was our pace. You know, I think we were fifth last year, and we dropped to ninth. And one of the things that we're thinking about that may be able to help is, you know, on makes we do this, on misses we do that. so that gives the guys a little bit better direction of, you know, what needs to happen right now. I also felt that last year we got to the corners, which flattened out the defense a little bit quicker. We were okay doing it, but we didn't run as hard off the ball this year as we did last year. And then, you know, part of this process, this growth process, is you got to give guys a little bit more freedom to see what they can bring to the table. And we shot more mid-ranges and more difficult threes this year. But, you know, we have guys that are capable of doing it, and they're going to have to do it in order for us to have some success. So, you know, our shot selection wasn't great, which attributed – wasn't great in terms of what it was last year, which is why the numbers were really good last year. But the guys that took those shots, you know, Keegan, Malik, those guys are going to have to take those shots. And they're going to have to make those shots for us. So I'm 100% okay with them doing it. We just have to make sure that we're better in other areas. And then, like I said, Jay, if we just shot the same rate we did from the free throw line last year as we did this year, we jumped six spots from 13 to 7. And to me, if you can finish in the top five, that's great, especially back-to-back years. If you finish in the top 10, I can definitely live with that. Knowing that there's room to improve, and our guys will work their tails off this summer, because like I said, it's a big summer for everybody to improve individually, which will mean we'll improve collectively.
Coach, the Athletic report on your contract situation, you got a mutual option after year three. I'm curious, like, do you anticipate having some conversations about a possible extension this summer? Like, and how much of this is top of mind for you at this point?
It's not really. At the end of the day, I have 1 year left on my deal. Everybody knows that. but I'm excited about being here. I'm excited about our future, and so I'm going to go into this summer trying to figure out how we can be better next year, and then next year trying to attack it, because again, we're disappointed we're not playing, and we feel like we left some things on the table.
That disappointment obviously shared by some of the players, and I imagine the fan base as well. If you're speaking directly to the fans, like, what do you say to them in terms of, you know, where you guys need to, the sense of urgency, I guess, to improve? Or do you feel, you know, that you just kind of give them a little bit of a calm down kind of, you know, sense?
No, I mean, our fans are great. I absolutely love our fans. I mean, even when I wasn't here, I thought the fans were great, you know, especially, you know, for what they had gone through for so long. So that's what makes this game fun. It's what makes it exciting. That's what keeps you on edge all the time is trying to do well, not only for yourself and for the organization, but for them too. So they pay their hard-earned money to come watch us and support us, and you know, buy the gear, and you know, and all that other stuff. And they talk more positive about us than negative. And so there's no way that I would, you know, try to tell them to do anything but continue to use us as an outlet to enjoy life however they want to, as long as obviously they don't go overboard. I mean, none of us want any of that. And then, you know, obviously, if we're up three and there's a minute and a half to go in the game and we're shooting a free throw, don't start yelling, light the beam then. Wait a little longer. It's probably the one thing I tell them.
Mike, you've talked a lot this year about the strength of the Western Conference. Yeah. From the outside of the organization perspective, you see the massive jumps for a Minnesota. From the outside the organization perspective, you see the massive jumps for the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Oklahoma City Thunder. And I think outside the organization, there's like a pressure of being passed up or falling behind. Does that pressure exist, I guess, internally? And if not, how do you separate yourself from the pressure of what other teams around you are doing?
Well, I mean, you know, it's what our business is about. You know, I don't know, and there probably is, but I feel like just like each player probably puts a tremendous amount of pressure on themselves because you want to win. You want to win at the highest level, and so for me, I'm okay with the pressure, expectations, because that comes along with the job, and you kind of welcome that because, again, I think pressure is a privilege. If you don't have pressure on you, that means you're probably insignificant, you know, or what you're doing doesn't matter to you or to anybody else, and so I feel like I embrace it. Everybody else that is part of our organization embraces it. We want it. We want to be in that position. But the reality of it is, Maddie, it doesn't. Things in life don't do this. You know. Again, I've been not just with Golden State, even you know, San Antonio and Cleveland and, you know, other organizations that I've been a part of NBA Finals. Our climb wasn't like this. It was here, and then you take a step back, and then hopefully you take three or four forward, and then you take one, maybe one and a half back, maybe two. But the, you know, so it's part of the growth process that you need to be able to go through in order to attain that championship level that you're seeking. You know, again, I'm 100% okay with any type of pressure that comes our way, and I truly feel our players are too. This is, and I've said this before, this is probably the first time that most of them have been in the roles that they're in and experienced the expectations and pressure that comes along with being in those roles after being a playoff team last year. So I think it was a huge growth year in that department. But, you know, I don't think anybody can put more pressure on trying to win than we put on ourselves. Thank you, guys. Okay. Nah, you know, first of all, we love Malik. Everybody knows that. I truly believe Malik loves it here. Fans have done a fantastic job of showing him love, and I think he really, really, really appreciates that. And he's got a great soul, and he's about as charismatic as they come. So, in terms of him being back, that's a no-brainer. But obviously that I don't have, you don't, I don't. You know, that's going to have to take care of itself. And I truly believe we're all on the same page with that. You know, having Malik and even Kevin, you know, they were big for us. But at the end of the day, I believed in the guys that we had in uniform. And again, it's kind of been a staple of ours. We didn't have to see it much last year because we didn't have many injuries. But this year, you know, you always talk about next man up, and we had some guys step into some roles this year that got it done. And, you know, I was even curious as to whether or not they can handle the pressure and get it done. And the first one that comes to mind is young Keon. Young Keon started against Portland and helped us get a win, and then he turns around and starts against Oklahoma City without Foxy and helps us get a win. So having that next man up mindset and truly believing in it is a big thing going forward, and having some success with it only helps with the belief. So no-brainer to have Malik back. Malik, you hear me? But at the end of the day, that we're all on the same page here at in the organization. But that will take care of itself. And like I said, having Kevin or Malik would have been great, but they were hurt, and guys stepped up, and I'm proud of the way everybody stepped up, even though we're disappointed in how it ended.
Coming up next, we react to everything Mike Brown had to say. There was a lot, and we hear from you, 916-339-1140. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacktown Sports.
Check us out on YouTube. Search Sacktown Sports and subscribe.
A lot of meat on that bone, or impossible meat if you are vegan.
That's right.
And Mike Brown had a lot to say. Chris, what were your initial thoughts and takeaways?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, there was definitely a lot in there. I mean, that was a really long press conference. I think that started at 11, and they just wrapped it up here a couple minutes ago. So that was definitely a lot from head coach Mike Brown, but this is the last time we're even going to be able to hear from him for a really long time. So all really good information, I thought. Definitely sounded like he was really positive about the season outlook in general. You know, said, you know, people were performing incredibly well. And, you know, even Chris Verlod said, texted me, can you really say phenomenal? There was a couple times where he said people were phenomenal, or we had groups of people do phenomenal jobs.
And yes.
You finish as a 9 seed. I know he's being nice there.
He said towards the end, and I would say outside of Keon, he said, you know, guys got hurt and other guys came in and got it done. And I said, well, what's your definition of...
Who else besides Keon?
Yes, and what's your definition of getting it done?
But that all aside, there was definitely some good nuggets in there for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll talk, I think, a little bit later after Monty's presser. We'll kind of recap everything in total. Definitely dropped a really big nugget in there about the coaching staff and what he plans to do now that Jordy's gone. Definitely sounds like he's got some things in motion. Mm-hmm. Luke Laux, Doug Christie, maybe moving up the coaching totem pole. But to me, the biggest thing I heard was him saying, and it was at the start of the press conference, maybe if Fox doesn't hit some of those game winners last year, we have the same record that we had this year.
Yeah.
When I heard him say that, I mean, I just never thought of that this entire season. But I mean, you know, I keep talking about all year, you know, the fun moments that we just didn't get in this year. It's really weird to think, oh yeah, without those fun moments last year, maybe this really was the same exact season that we had just been through.
Yeah, other teams just got better, and he did bring up the free throws. If we shot the same rate from the free throw line last year, we would have finished 7th in offensive rating instead of 13th. All right, when we return, the other guy that you want to hear from, Big Monty golf. McNair, and the future moves that he will be making this offseason. We have his presser when we return. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.